Hello and welcome to Secondhand Film Critics, your favorite source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies. I'm Kayla, and I'm normally here with my co-host Noah, who you guys know, but he's not here today. I am by my lonesome. I had the wonderful opportunity to attend Lost Weekend Film Festival at my local Alamo Drafthouse, and my good friend Andy and a friend of the podcast was able to set me up with this interview about the movie Stop and Go. Stop and Go is a really funny drama, road trip, buddy comedy set at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic. The two characters are two sisters who are traveling to basically rescue their grandmother from a nursing home that was having a COVID outbreak. And it's about their journey, you know, stopping at the gas station, being wary of strangers, using hand sanitizer, worrying about Tom Hanks, all the things that we experienced together at the beginning of the pandemic. It's a really funny film. It was definitely a joy to be able to watch this and experience this film with an audience. Mallory Everton and Whitney Call are so cool. They both starred in this film as the two sisters. Mallory co-directed the film, and Whitney and Mallory both wrote this film together. They've been making movies their whole lives as kids growing up, and now we're finally able to make this debut feature film together. So I'm excited for you to hear this interview with them. They're super, super cool, and I can't wait to see what other content that they make together next. I'm really excited for you guys to listen to this interview with them, and I hope that you really seek out a way to watch this film and get a chance to see it. It'll hit streaming in 2022 in January. Right now it's releasing in select theaters. I will give a heads up, my audio in the interview is a little wonky because I had a mask on and I also was using my phone to record my audio, so the room tone, you know, is what it is. But either way, they're very cool and very worth listening to. So without further ado, I will let them introduce themselves.
I'm Mallory Everton. I am a co-writer, co-director, and actor in the movie Stop and Go.
And I'm Whitney Call. I also co-wrote and co-starred in Stop and Go.
Wow, thank you. And I'm Kayla.
Well, hello, Kayla.
So this is your first in-person screening of the movie.
Yeah.
What was that like when the movie finished and you were able to kind of soak in, hopefully soak in, or maybe you'll be processing even as the weeks go by how it went? What were you kind of feeling after that?
Oh man, I mean it was there's just something very palpable about seeing something in a community. You know, we've done a lot of stage performances in our career growing up. And so just having the vibe of an audience bouncing off of them has kind of been what we've been used to. And that's what we've thrived on. That's how we've really honed our craft to know what the best jokes are, the best stories to tell. And so to then go from that to making something in total isolation, and showing it, screening it at different festivals in total isolation, and then just reading critics' reviews, and that's been our experience so far with this film. Other than, you know, a few friends here and there seeing it and giving us their thoughts, so to be able to sit in a room to not just hear but to feel the experience that everyone's having together, it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. I was just so grateful to have this experience with people who got it. You know, when you make something, you always hope someone's gonna get it and just think like, yeah, what you just said right there, I've been there. Because then it just, I feel like regardless of whether you've lived that exact same story or whether it's fiction or nonfiction, to be able to communicate a sentiment or an energy that someone else has had that exact wavelength going on, it's such a bonding experience that I think cinema gives to us over and over. It was magical tonight to really feel that among so many people.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's always nice to feel like an audience liked something you made, especially if you know, something like a feature, it takes so long, it takes so many people and so many different relationships and conversations, so many different fires you had to throw your body onto to try and put out, especially a small film like ours. And to really have not had that experience at all since we've made it. You know, when we found out that we got into South by Southwest, that was the first moment that it even occurred to us that this movie might be liked by anyone, really. Because prior to that point, it was like, well, we learned a lot, and that was really good. And we even learned about applying for festivals, and isn't that great? Mm-hmm. But when we got in, we thought, what? Is it better than we thought? Like, what is going on? And so to come from a place of, like, sort of complete, like, oh, well, we both talked about it. I think it was in December, and Whitney had made her Christmas card, and we had made the movie, like, from... We started making the movie in July, and we had to finish it by, like, mid-September. It was a crazy fast and furious process.
My mom was asking for different stories from each of the kids in our family about what they'd been doing this year. And I said, yeah, we worked on a show, Freelancers, and we've just, you know, been playing with our boys at home. And I wrote up this little paragraph, and I was about to hit send, and I was like, oh, we made a movie. It's like, I guess I should include that. It just totally, it got to a point, I think, that we forgot that we did it for a couple months because it was so fast, such a whirlwind that, and then just stopped for a while. And we just kind of forgot that we just bled for, you know, 2 months into something that we were probably just going to pack away and say, oh, that was a good lesson.
A huge purpose in us a huge reason why we made the movie was just to give ourselves purpose during a purposeless time. So in some ways it was like we were so grateful to have a mission for a couple of months. And then after that it was like, well, oh boy, here comes more pandemic. And we just kind of forgot about it almost. That's what we were thinking about this movie. So when it started getting into festivals and people actually started watching it, it was like, first, it was very surreal, and especially because it got into a digital festival and people watched it in their beds. We watched it in our beds. Again, it was like, has anything changed? Did people really actually watch this? Is it actually connecting with anybody? And so to be in a crowd of super, super nice people out here in Winchester being so kind and smiling and hearing people laugh and just enjoy it and then talking with them afterward. I mean, it's been completely overwhelming in the best way because it's just been a wild year stuck in your own head, you know?
You edited it. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like doing that, like, quicker shotgun process, like, benefited you? Because I know, like, The Green Knight, the editor or the guy who made it, went back and re-edited things because he sat on it for so long in the pandemic. So do you think it benefited you, or do you feel like you would have gone over it more if you had longer time with it?
I go back and forth because there's a part of me that, because I had a similar experience. We watched it with a group of people. So I had about, I think I hadn't seen any version of the film in about 6 months. And I was like, oh crap. I would have done this differently. I would have cut this differently. And if I could have, I would have changed it. But I couldn't. And there's a part of me that thinks that that's kind of great. Like, we had to go so fast through this whole process that you just didn't have time for indecision. It was like that in the writing process, too. There were multiple situations. And basically, anytime something worked, it was like, great. We got to put that in, stick and move. Keep going. We have 100 other problems to solve today. Stick and move. Got a new thing. Got to figure this out. If we're going to hit this crazy deadline, we don't have time to stress or dawdle. Does that work for you? Works for me. It's making us both laugh. Let's keep moving, you know? And it's something I really hope to keep taking into my future work to an extent. Like, don't overthink it, especially on early drafts of a thing. But I would love to combine the two. You know what I mean? Like, I would love to combine, like, let's get out that first draft. Let's make sure that we get to, like, the end of that first hard road. Make sure that we're, like, getting, like, we're moving at a nice clip so that we don't spend too much time in indecision. But also, let's, like, I know that famously Stephen King, he likes to put his books in a drawer for, I think, at least 2 months and then read them again. You know, I would love that. Maybe 2 months isn't, but even I would have killed for 2 weeks. Like, I would have killed for 2 weeks. I mean, but toward the end, it was like we were just pulling all-nighters, like working until 6:30 in the morning, multiple days in a row with, like, bleary-eyed, bleeding eyes. So, yeah, it would have been great to have a little bit of time to sit on it, like the editor of The Green Knight, the, like, most gorgeous film ever. But, yeah, That's a very good question. And I go back and forth, like I said.
Do you feel like now, looking back on it, like, because obviously you made this pretty early on, or what feels like early on in what's been almost 2 years of a pandemic, pretty much. Do you feel like looking back on it, you can see how that was a very, like, relic of its time, almost, those first, like, few weeks of Tom Hanks and NBA and hand sanitizer and, like, where the pandemic is now? Like, how do you guys feel looking back on it as kind of even, like, a think piece or, like, a retrospective of a very specific, like, time period?
I mean, I think that was what we were hoping it would be when we knew that we would be referencing this very specific time period. But it, again, we were guessing, and just knowing now that it's become such a, there's so much about the pandemic that we're just so jaded by it. We're so weary from living in fear. I think it's made everyone just tired. And so I think that aspect of the film, hopefully will translate into something that, like, I know we're all so tired. Isn't it fun to just kind of laugh at the things that now we can say were extreme, even though there are still so many unanswered questions? We at least know these things can be put in this box now, and we can laugh at those things. And so, you know, gas stations and groceries and the fact that we all went out and just hurriedly bought frozen food and just things like that, to know that moment hopefully has passed. Knock on wood, who knows though, right? We're all now just ready for anything to happen. I think that moment though, we knew we could hopefully contain, because it was already kind of passing by July. But again, it was such a toss up when we made it, to just say, like, listen, this might be something that if we ever show its face to someone next year, they'll say, how dare you? Half of the country is dead and the other half is unemployed. And it was such a bleak future. I think it was also we wrote it with a hope that maybe someday we'll show this when we can all gather again and laugh again. It was a way to kind of keep the fire burning.
Yeah, I think when I look at it, I'm relieved that we didn't try to talk about it more. You know, like, I don't even feel like we could take tons of credit for it, but I'm so glad that we weren't, like, trying to contextualize what was going on more. Because I think some of the reason we didn't do that is because we were like, yeah, I don't even know what to say. Like, I'm too depressed to even talk about this. So let's just talk about, like, a weird lizard, sexy lizard or something. let's have, like, a bunch of weird things happen, or have, like, a bunch of conversations. Let's just focus on these two girls. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that was sort of the thing that I think it was a weird, like, living metaphor for me in some ways. Like, I'm making this movie with my best friend, and we like are in the middle of this pandemic, and we have no idea what's going to happen next. And that's how every day felt. And I kind of feel like that's how the movie feels. It's like they're in the middle of this thing, but it literally just, like, cuts off at the end. You're just like, I don't know if they catch Grandma or not. And who knows if Blake actually goes back with Jamie, or if she's stuck with Aaron for months. Like, you don't know. And we don't know. Yeah. So
one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about is I'm a woman. And you guys wrote in these very specific, like, things. I know you said in your Q&A talking about the period jokes. How important was it to you to be able to include those kind of stories? Because I know for me, watching comedies like, you referenced Booksmart, stuff like that has been coming up a lot recently, where it's like, oh, we are talking about these things now. I love seeing myself on screen with these everyday experiences. What was that like for you to be able to include those kind of things?
So it was such a celebration, I think, while we were writing it. It's things that came so naturally to us. In sketch comedy, we wrote for a family-friendly network. And so we made sketch comedy that was supposed to be more safe for work content. And we were always itching to put jokes or sketches in that had to do with just more female-oriented things that were often censured. And it was often said, like, you know, talking about a woman's body is not family friendly. Mm-hmm. And it was such an interesting topic. We would often just like beat our heads against of like, why isn't it family friendly? We like, why isn't it? There's just so many aspects of our lives that just are. It's just truth. But because society has sexualized us, mm-hmm. because society has taken our voice away, it just, I think, gets perpetually represented through a male gaze, which then either makes it considerably boring or considerably sexualized. And so to make women who are women, we're under the impression that this would maybe just be a film that would resonate with women. We were like, who knows if this will even be something that guys would connect with, because we're really just trying to tell stories that we like telling. But we hoped it would, because it is such a human story. And I feel like there's so
because
much
we're human because and we're women human. Are human.
It just was something we hoped so much would translate across all barriers.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't say that it was just a huge relief to write whatever we wanted, you know, because we were so used to writing for specifically for a family-friendly audience, which we loved doing. There's so many great things about it. I hope I can still work in that space from time to time. But that we didn't seek out, like, we got to write something about periods. We just didn't censor ourselves at all. We just wrote something that was like, well, maybe this would happen next. Like, what's a reason why they'd have to pull over? Well, we're both women, and yeah, like, what would we do? We probably forgot tampons. You know, we were leaving pretty quickly. So I hope that I wish that for every person, that they feel like they can just write from their genuine experience. That's what I want. I feel like that's when we get really great specific stories and things I've never even thought of, because somebody from a specific background, specific place said, hey, this is what happens to me. And it's usually that specificity is actually like some of the most human, like we can all relate on some deep level, like, oh, the inconvenience of it. Like, if my body just started bleeding, I think men can imagine, you know, what it would be like if we just are specific enough and honest enough to tell our own stories. I really feel like it's best. It's great for all of us, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. So on our podcast, which is called Secondhand Film Critics, every year we do our own secondhand film awards, which is basically like our Oscars, so that we can highlight smaller films as well. And we have a category for best dog. And you guys have a very cute dog in your film. And I was wondering if you could do like a campaign for your dog to be nominated and maybe win Best Dog for the Secondhand Film Awards.
The case is not hard to make. Yeah. His name is Bane. He is our next door neighbor's dog. They were so gracious to let us use him for the filming. He's 8 years old. He's a senior dog. He's in his, you know, last sunset phase of life. He really is the neighborhood dog. Everyone in the neighborhood sees Bane out walking the streets in the morning, just saying hi to everyone. Whenever my kids go on a walk, he will follow them to just basically have like make them have companionship and protection, and he'll follow them back home. He just is real uncomfortable in the summertime and stays in the shade 100%. And then during the snow days, he just is the happiest boy. He was so sweet. We had to drag him up and down that road with our rollerblades. And he just was so happy to be around our film crew, who just adored him. We had to lift him into the car every time because he's arthritic at this point.
Hip problems. Mm-hmm. So he's a sweet Bernese Mountain Dog with hip problems, who was like our mascot. I swear we wouldn't have gotten through the shoot without him, because of all the joy you just get from petting a big fluffy dog when you're like, I think this movie might suck. Bane, save me. He was so good.
The entire crew was like, this dog is so chill and he's so lovely. We said, that's just Bane, man. He is the loveliest soul.
Vote for Bane.
Vote for Bane.
And finally, is there anything that you guys can recommend to watch that maybe you guys watched that you stumbled across during this long quarantine time?
Ooh. Oh, man.
So much, right?
Well, I mean, while we're on the topic of women, I don't know. Kevin can F himself. I don't know if I should, I'll like blur, I'll bleep it just. No, it's on a, what is it, on AMC Plus, and it is so interesting and good. Earlier today we were doing a Q&A with like a bunch of actor students at the university, and one of them had a question about what our favorite roles to play were, and we both brought up roles where we either got to play men or like really grungy, gross women. And it's partially just like women historically have had almost nothing to do in so many stories. I feel like often it was like I'm looking at a wall of movie posters right now, and I feel like so often it was like, maybe if I'm really, really lucky and I'm an incredible actress, I'll be able to play the wife of a great man. You know, like I'll get to play like Abe Lincoln's wife or Neil Armstrong's wife or, you know, whatever. And
or the female remake of an original male character.
Yeah, we'll love to compare. Let's make a movie that everyone's going to compare to the original and way prefer the original, because that's the way sequels go. Let's make women look terrible, essentially. We can't even come up with original stories. So, yeah, Kevin Can Fuck Himself is so good because I feel like it is acknowledging a lot of different things about media that I think are really interesting. I've never seen anything like it. You know, half of it is multicam sitcom. When you're like in the guy's perspective, it is multicam sitcom and it's all about Kevin. And when he leaves the room, it is a gritty drama or dramedy, I guess. And it's beautiful to me. First of all, because it's so fun to see us sort of using an old 90s sitcom medium and remixing it into something interesting and fresh, but also acknowledging like, yeah, this woman would want to shoot that man in the head. Like, we got to give women more to do. And this is a great, like, very literal representation of that. I really, really enjoyed it. I just finished it last week. It's so good. And then I've also been watching the other two on HBO Max, and I just love it. I mean, one thing we talked about a lot while we were making this movie is we want it to be really fun, but we also want it to be sweet and nice and for people to feel welcome. That show does that so beautifully, where you love all the characters, but you're laughing the whole time, and everyone's a little silly, but you don't hate anyone, and it's all very nice. Anyway, those are my two right now.
I was going to say Mayor of Easttown. Oh. I just, gosh, I mean, if you can have, like, Kate Winslet is my guru. I want, like, Kate Winslet and Emma Thompson, and the fact that they're friends, and they've started this whole coalition to normalize aging for women in Hollywood, and they're just so against plastic surgery, and they're just saying, like, hey, like, there's a scene in there in the first episode of Mayor of Easttown where she takes her shirt off, and you see her tummy. And I remember thinking, I love it. It made me tear up while watching it to see Kate Winslet without makeup and softer. And she said the director was telling her, we're going to edit your tummy, don't worry. And she said, don't you dare. And someone asked, you know, did you gain weight for this character? And she said, no, it's just we had a pandemic, so I gained weight and then I made this show. And I loved that answer, because it's such, she's this 46-year-old woman and she's playing this cop who just doesn't have time to care about how she looks. So she's totally utilitarian, like we were talking about. And she has time to like snarf down a Philly cheesesteak at the end of the day because she just is doing hard work, saving lives. And it's Kate Winslet. And it's, oh gosh, there just was such a great cast in it too. But I think Kate will forever just be the person I look to when I want to feel good about where women are going in this world. Because she just has made such a path for people to feel good for just being normal. And just being and aging and growing, expanding, having different any kind of things. She's just saying, like, listen, we need to be who we are. Otherwise, no one's going to feel safe. And we're always going to hope to be this airbrushed version. So, I mean, that all is completely separate from the fact that it's a really fun series and it's written so well. There's so much that I love about the tension that is so well mixed with humor. I think any good movie or TV show is going to have a little humor added into it, because you don't deal with seriousness in life just with seriousness. You usually get through it with laughter. And yeah. So for people to mix in something like that, I feel like it's so beautifully human. It's a great, great flick. Great experience.
Great flick.
Great flick. It's a great cinema.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Because I feel like, you know, everything that you just said, I think you guys captured a lot of some of those same things.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
In your movie with, like, women are normal. Yeah. And this is how they are in real life.
Isn't that weird? Yeah. We make up half the world, and yet it's still weird to see normal women in movies.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's how my life is, too. I can't believe that.
Oh, I love that.
I love hearing that. Thank you.
Yeah, but cool. Thank you guys so much for chatting with me. And
of course. Thanks for
so
having
cool.
us.
Thank you, Kayla.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's the show, folks. Thank you for tuning in. As always, you can find us on all social media platforms. Just search Secondhand Film Critics. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. And until next time, I'm Kayla. And Noah will also be there next time. Yeah, bye.